Welcome to Voices of Homelessness. I'm your host, Donald Whitehead. I am the executive director for the National Coalition for the Homeless. We are the oldest advocacy organization that works with and on behalf of people experiencing homelessness, and also the largest organization that is led primarily by people with lived experience. On Voices of Homelessness, it's our goal to ensure that you hear the full story of people who have experienced homelessness, who work in the field, who write about it, all the collective voices that tell the true story of homelessness. And we're glad you're with us. And today we have amazing guests who are from a program called CASA, and they'll talk about the location for the program. But we want to talk with staff. We want to talk with one of the residents, and we want to get a picture of their experience from their own voice to help guide us in homelessness and how homelessness is navigated in the richest country in the world. So I want to welcome to the show Sharon Jones and Kashira. Kashira, I forgot to ask you your last name.
It's Jones as well.
Okay, so we have the Joneses on today. So hopefully people will be able to keep up with the Joneses as far as homelessness in this country and how it works out. And thank you for your lovely smiles. And I'm just going to jump right into the questions. Kashira, I'm going to start with you. How has the CASA program and its ability to provide stable housing, how has that affected you?
It's affected me a lot. It's definitely helped out a lot because before we officially came to CASA, me and my mother did tend to move around a lot. So I wasn't exactly able to make friends, but I wasn't there long to really stick. So when we really moved in the CASA and I was able to actually have stable housing. I was able to go to school, make friends, catch the bus, do, you know, regular kids things. I don't have to worry about us moving or having to go anywhere because CASA has been very helpful.
And so can you tell us a little bit of the backstory? How do you know how your family came to be in the situation? Do you know if there was an event? Sometimes it's a natural disaster. Sometimes it's the loss of the job. Sometimes it's a divorce. Sometimes it's domestic violence. Unfortunately, way too many times for families. But if you're comfortable, can you share a little bit of that backstory with us?
I'm comfortable. It's just every backstory has many different stories to it because everyone has, you know, their own point of views of how everything happened. But as I've gotten older, since I'm 21 now, I've basically recollected my own story of what I remember plus things that other people have told me. The family, we fell apart after some deaths in the family, especially. It was a lot of misunderstandings and altercations. But although those things did happen, it led to us being, you know, homeless for a little bit. Well, we always made it fun. That's the main thing I remember, is we always made it fun.
Awesome. You know, it isn't the end of the world. It's certainly a situation that, you know, is traumatic. I mean, to not know kind of where your next night sleeping is. I'm glad you guys were able to navigate it and not, totally implode because of it, because some families do. And so love that you have such a positive outlook, and hopefully we'll be able to hear a little bit more about kind of what you're doing now. I'm going to go to Sharon, but I also want to go to you. If you're out there listening to us, please subscribe to our channel. We would love to have many of you be a part of what we're trying to do here. And the main goal is to change the narrative, because these stories that you're hearing now, what homelessness is really like, it's not all of the stereotypes you see on the street. These are real people who have had the courage to be able to tell their story in front of all of you. So please, on behalf of them, on behalf of the National Coalition, please subscribe to us. Sharon, how are you today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Pretty good. And Sharon, what do you do at CASA? And tell us a little bit more about CASA.
Well, we've been staying under CASA for about 13 years now, since my daughter was in first or second grade. So it's amazing. Like my daughter said, we moved around quite a bit just based on finances, based on landlords that don't want to fix anything, based on low-income housing, just based on things that was beyond my control. We did have a trailer in Johnston County that had black mold, and my daughter kept getting sick from it. The landlord didn't want to fix anything, so it was just like, we stayed with friends on their couch. You know, you can't do that for so long, and the landlord still ain't fixed, and then you got to save money just to move, and we didn't have all of that. We've been on a set income, so I just had to, like, bite my bullet and, you know, humble myself. I'm going to say that. I had to humble myself because it's truly getting to this point. It's truly an experience I've accomplished, and my daughter has accomplished so much as staying under CASA. And if I feel like if it would have happened any other way, like staying with family or whatever, then I probably wouldn't be able to appreciate what we have. You know, probably wouldn't be in predicaments where we can afford, you know, rent and lights and the necessities of life and still have something to save or have something for going out to eat or something, you know, stuff that you don't have to worry about.
You know, a lot of people have misconceptions about how people became homeless. You know, how people a lot of people place the blame on them, you know, that it's some kind of substance abuse issue or mental health. There are a lot of people on the street that have that issue, but the majority of the people that are homeless for other reasons. What is the biggest misconception you get if you ever, you know, have to tell your story or let somebody know that you've had this experience? What is the biggest misconception that you get?
A lot of times, you can't really tell who's homeless and who's going through things. Because even though me and my daughter was homeless, like the shelters that we stayed at, the community programs like the Women's Center, like so many places, so many churches, like gave us clothes, gave us shoes, gave us vouchers to go, you know, pick out our own clothes. So it's like, I don't know. It's like a lot of people really didn't know what was going on with me because
right.
I had to keep a smile on my face, you know, not just for me, but for my daughter, you know. And then I went through the same thing growing up just a little bit, but I didn't have my child with me. I was, you know, I didn't have a child then. So that was, she's my motivation.
And Kishara, one of the questions I would have for you is, one of the things we are famous for is one of our staffers was really instrumental in passing what's called the Education of Homeless Children and Youth. And that program allowed you to stay in the school you were in before you became homeless? Were you able to utilize those resources, or did you have to change schools a lot?
I can't exactly remember. I remember the schools I went to for elementary school. So I know I went to multiple schools for elementary school.
So you went to multiple schools.
Yeah.
Not after we moved to CASA, though.
Yeah, not
so
after
CASA. So CASA probably utilized that program, I bet.
Yes, sir. They did.
And you got transportation and that sort of thing to the schools.
Yeah.
That is awesome. Because we think that if we can, you know, really prevent some of the things that happen to students, like students that transfer a whole lot, there are some challenges with education at times. The more we can keep people kind of having some consistency, getting that sense of belonging, it really changes their outlook. What are some of the things that being in a shelter that you miss the most? What are kind of the everyday things that you do now? Because it looks like you're in your own apartment now, right?
Yes.
And so, like in a shelter, you know, there are things that you would normally do in that apartment that you can't do now. Can you help people understand, like, some of the things that you miss because of being in a shelter?
Well, for me, since I'm an only child with my mother, and at that point in time, I was an only child as well with my father, it was nice to be around other kids and other children, whether my age or older or even younger. So it was nice to make other friends and enjoy myself. And then, like my mother said, with the churches and other places that we went to and the women's center, it was one time it had snowed really good and they took us sledding and we built awesome. Snowmen and made s'mores and it was awesome.
And those are the kind of things that individuals can do in a community. You can go to a shelter and provide those experiences. As you hear from Kashira, there are like, it has a lasting impact. You remember that. You remember sledding. Mm-hmm. You remember the friends that you made. And that's when people ask what they can do. Would you say that's something that people can do, like the volunteer activities? One of the things we used to do at the shelter I worked in Orlando, Florida, is we had birthday parties because a lot of people don't get to do birthdays. Did CASA have anything like that or the women's
program? We used to with one.
We used to at Miss Jury.
Yeah.
And they
used to have, but it was from donations.
Yes.
So it was collaborated with CASA, but it was through donations through the Women's Center, I believe, as well.
Awesome. And I think another important thing that happens is I know a lot of students don't get like tutoring. They can't go to after school activities because they have to be back at a certain time for dinner or whatever. Did you guys have any of that in the program?
Awesome. They did the same. Yeah, it was very educational. Very educational.
I'm just trying to give our listeners like some ideas about what they could do. Because you can't always give money, right? You can't always buy stuff. Sometimes giving of yourself even makes more of an impression on people. It lasts, as we just heard, with people when those kind of experiences happen. So we want to give people opportunities. If you were, either of you, again, can answer this. If you were to talk to your representative from North Carolina, right?
Yeah.
One of your representatives or somebody who's actually running for either governor or somebody who's running for Congress right now, because that's about to happen. What would you tell them is important for people experiencing homelessness? What is the most important thing that you would say to them?
Two of the most important things would be, one, to help with food and education.
Yes.
Although, like, there's so many shelters, there's so many places and everything, we need more space as mm-hmm. well. So, although, yeah, we can get all the space They can have all this space, but we need more food. We need more people to give more instead of taking it from people or always assuming. And
you're talking about the people that are cutting food stamps and stuff like that who don't really care if people eat, unfortunately.
And then education is a big one, because knowledge is definitely more powerful than money ever will be.
Okay. Are you thinking about college?
I'm thinking about college possibly next year. As of this year, I wanted to focus on working and making money. And then, because I've tried working and going to college, and I realized I can't handle the balance.
It's really tough. I've tried that myself a couple of times. It's tough.
It's hard.
You know, as I work on, advancing my degrees, I want to, it's tough. It's impossible. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad you have a stable place that you can make that decision. You're not forced to make any decision. So congratulations on that. And what about you, Mom? Or what are you thinking we need to tell these people that, have the ability to affect our lives in so many different ways?
I would say that the cost of living is ridiculously high. And with the continuously building and taking over property that can be used to give back to the community is taken over by condos and all of the fancy stuff that to where it's moving. I'm noticing it's moving more people into the woods, staying in tents and everything. I would say housing as well. Because if you don't have nowhere to stay, how can you take care of yourself? But then it goes back to money. If you're paying me $12 an hour and my rent is, rent in Raleigh now, you'd be lucky to get $1,000 a month for rent. What's doing $12 an hour going to do?
Absolutely.
That's what causes homelessness right there. And then you can't make but so much, or they take away your food stamps. And you can't make but so much because then they take away your health care. But you're still stuck with $12 an hour.
Exactly.
And if you have kids, you can't do everything. Cost of food. So I've been in that predicament to where it's like, Either I make so much money, but then it's like I'm losing everything else to where I have to continuously go back to school to get a better education to where I can make enough money to survive, just so I can give this place, this apartment, to someone else and me and my daughter be comfortable living here. I don't want to leave here and be struggling even more because I'm, thinking I can do it when in reality, times are hard right now. Times really are. And if it weren't for CASA, really, I don't know. I don't know where we'll be.
There was just a report yesterday that looked at one-bedroom apartments across the country. Not to mention, you guys would probably need a two-bedroom apartment. You probably wouldn't be surprised to know that nowhere in this country can you make minimum wage and be able to afford an apartment, a two-bedroom apartment, nowhere in the country. Yeah. And only about, I think it used to be 10% of the country could you afford a one-bedroom, but I think it's even less than that now. So I get the affordability issue, because you're almost like forced to make a decision whether you want the extra things that you can get when you have no income or make an income and struggle. One of the things that HUD has on the plate right now is they are thinking about time limits for like subsidized housing, Section 8. Do you think it'd be a good idea to only let people stay in Section 8 for 3 years?
I don't think it should be a time limit.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it should be based on their story, based on what they're able to do, based on their income, based on their education, based on, you know, their goals. To where if they can be self-sufficient without help, then that's good. We'll help you. We'll, you know, give the resources that you need to better yourself to do that.
I think you're right. You know, everybody comes at a different story. It sounds like in your situation, if there had been some resources there before you became homeless, like once you, you know, discovered mold in your apartment, if somebody would have been there to provide resources for a different place before, you know, it didn't get fixed, or if someone forced the landlord to fix it, it would have changed things. So we think that it's really important to provide prevention for people. Now, if you would have gotten that help beforehand, wouldn't that have probably changed your story quite a bit?
Yes, it would have. It would have.
We just don't have enough of that in the community anymore. There's no prevention. We start helping people once they get to the point where they are homeless, where they don't have anywhere else mm-hmm. to go, versus while that kind of stuff is happening, whether it be, you know, the landlord not doing the right thing, or, you know, someone loses their job, or they're in a, again, a domestic violence situation, nobody's there to reach out to help. And I just think we have to kind of move in that direction if we truly want to end homelessness. How is it, I heard you mention like part of the solution at the one program you volunteered at was bus tickets.
Right.
Bus cards, yeah.
Bus cards. And my recollection of North Carolina, though, is everything's pretty spread out, isn't it? Isn't it hard to get from one place to another?
It takes a while on the bus to get.
Yeah.
It
takes at least an hour.
And at least an hour. And I think people don't
just
recognize
one place.
Exactly. You know, people don't recognize the challenge that, you know, you as a head of household, a single head of household with a child, the challenge of navigating the system on the bus, basically. So you got to get your child to school. Hopefully there was some transportation. But if you're looking for a place or looking for a job, if you're doing that on the bus, it takes a considerable amount of time. And I don't think people recognize, you know, that difficulty. And just looking for a job, in your case, Kashira, you know, what do you guys have any thoughts about, you know, just how like a city like the one you're in North Carolina, what are some things that could be more helpful when it comes to transportation?
Transportation is okay. It just takes forever to get somewhere. Like the buses don't continuously run like they should.
Well,
they run like certain times of the day. It's every 30 minutes. Then certain times of the day it's every hour.
And when you get back, because that's a two-way trip. when you get back to the shelter, you know, that is probably a really frustrating day for you, isn't it?
Like, yeah.
The length of day, the many things you have to go through. People, you know, sometimes wonder why people appear, you know, you guys are smiling today and I love it. But sometimes you can't smile because the burden of going through the day to try to take care of all the things you have to take care of. I didn't mention doctor's appointments or, you know, prescriptions or any of that kind of stuff. It's pretty overwhelming, isn't it?
It is. It is.
Especially the trauma.
Yeah, I mean, but I don't know. I used to have a grudge against my mom and certain family members because it's like, I feel like I don't care what situation she was in. Like, she would never be homeless as long as, you know, I'm alive and this, that, and the other. But she shows, I don't know, we didn't have a close relationship, but she showed me tough love in the midst of it. So, I mean, We okay. But I don't know. I believe that everything happens for a reason.
I feel you on that quite a bit, because I went through the same situation. So I went through homelessness myself. And, you know, actually my family members did take me in, but, you know, they would, like you said, if you're living on somebody's couch, it can only last for a short period of time most of the time. And so, you know, after a while, everybody was like, nope, I'm taking care of my own family. And I think that is what separates, you know, people who become homeless versus people who don't. You know, so many people would be homeless if they didn't have a family member that was willing to take them in. And, you know, I think in your shoes, I was bitter for a while. But then I understand that for me, because mine was different, I was dealing with substance abuse. It really, you know, like you have this epiphany moment where like the world opens up and you kind of understand, you know, maybe you do need to do it on your own. If people had kept like my family enabled me a little bit, like my mom, like every time something happened to me, she would show up and she would, you know, give me some money or put me in a hotel or something like that. And it was only when she stopped doing that I did something on my own. Now mine is different because it was addiction. Yours wasn't your fault. So I do empathize with you, and I was there for a long time, but I'm glad that, you know, she also taught you to have a forgiving heart. And you've moved on for that, because sometimes that resentment can like keep you stuck for a while. Like you can't ever get to the point where you're happy because you're angry about something that happened with somebody else. So I'm glad you got to that point. And sounds like you guys are doing much better now. Are you still volunteering, or what else are you doing?
Well, I was, but they tried to get, they was denied for some funding for grants.
Which is happening a lot right now.
Yes, it is. So it's just like, I think right now they're in a limbo right now. So I don't know exactly what's going on the financial side, but I told them if they need me that they can reach out to me, and you know, I'm back.
Well, I'll tell you what's going on. HUD is like intentionally kind of slow balling the release of funds to a lot of community agencies across the country. They're still distributing funds from 2025. And they just got found in court because they tried to submit something that was illegal. And now, for the second year in a row, a court has found that it's illegal. So they're really moving slowly. And some communities, they've just stopped giving any money at all. We just learned that Milwaukee, for instance, one of their largest shelter providers, just went bankrupt. So that's how bad it is. Now, you've expressed how important it is to have these community-based organizations. How, you know, with that bit of help, you can kind of move forward with your life in a really successful way. We're so glad that, you know, CASA was there for you, and I forgot the other shelter, but that they were there for you, because, like you said, people are going to the woods now. Yeah. And we just did a report and we found that people are getting killed when they go to the woods, like four times as many people as we've seen in other years are winding up with some kind of violence against them. You know, we saw hundreds of cases across the country. So it's not only, you know, a terrible situation, you know, just from the geographic standpoint or like the human rights compassion standpoint. It's also dangerous at this point to be out on the streets in this country.
Yeah.
Have you lost any friends or heard of any friends getting, you know, having violence committed against them?
It did not happen to me, but I did have a friend where a friend of hers had became homeless because of she had to run away from her parents' house. And she ran away to the wrong people, and they did something bad to her, and she's no longer with us.
Oh, no.
And it really hurt her, so I was there for her. So it didn't really happen to me, but I have heard of someone. Yeah.
Almost everybody I talk to has that, it's just really sad that that's where we are in America. So, you know, you guys are authentic voices. You know, how can programs like CASA and other programs across the country, how can they utilize your voices? How do you think you can take what you're sharing today, or, you know, whatever else you might have that you're thinking about, how could it help programs be better programs?
I believe it goes hand in hand with volunteering and resources. Okay. Yeah, I feel like it goes hand in hand with those two. It's like, I don't know. Raising her, I did the community back to school drives when they gave out the book bags and school supplies, because every little bit helps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the Salvation Army, Angel, different sponsors and different things like that. It helps. It goes a long way. It's something that the parent don't have to worry about for their child. A lot of people just want to be heard. They don't know how to. A lot of people complain about society, but don't know where to go to be heard, or feel like their voice doesn't matter, or don't want people in their business, or, you know, they want to change, but they don't want the change because they're not making the steps to go to the meetings, the city meetings, the council meetings, or even vote for that matter. So,
and your elected officials want to hear from you. We have a program called the LEADA program, and it's the Lived Experience Training Academy. And mm-hmm. It kind of helps people understand, you know, what role they can play as leaders in their community. So if you do talk, I know you say you kind of stick to yourself, but if you know of people out there who are interested in kind of taking that next step and using their voice, like you said, in voting and getting out to their members in the state, city, and national level, we have this program that allows people to do that, and they get paid to do it. They get a stipend at the end for like $150, but that can help with a whole range of things. So I'd encourage people to go to our website, www.nationalhomeless.org, and look up the Lived Experience Training Academy. It's a guide path to people being able to become advocates in their own community and use their own voice. And I'm thankful to the team, and I'll mention just Miss Nicole Brown, who was really very instrumental in getting this together. She did a really good job of making sure that we were able to get you guys on to talk about, you know, your story. Really loved how open you are, and, you know, how positive you are, and how you are not, you know, blaming, you know, everybody and anybody for, you know, your situation, but you're actually looking at how you can get to that next stage in life. You know, that is so wonderful to hear. I've really appreciated, you know, again, how open and honest you are. And I hope that people listening heard their voices and heard, you know, the optimism, heard the ideas for other people, and actually heard, you know, about a program that shows that it cares. This is Voices of Homelessness, and this is what we do once a month. We talk to people. We have a conversation. And we ask you to listen very clearly and very closely to these voices so that when we shape policy, when we decide programs, when we make a decision whether or not to criminalize in the community, you remember these two people and you remember that they are people. They're not statistics. They're not a part of a survey or a study. They're living, breathing people who have had to deal with the issue of homelessness. They didn't get there because they were alcoholics or people with mental health issues. They got there because of situations beyond their control. And that's the voice of homelessness that we want you to hear. We thank you for being here. We hope that you'll give to the National Coalition, that you'll give to CASA in Raleigh, North Carolina, because it's through people doing this work on a volunteer basis. Sometimes they get paid, but they are God's gift to the world. They're doing the work that changes lives, that changes people, and makes this world a better place. So we thank you again. This has been the Voices of Homelessness. I am Donald Whitehead. Please subscribe to the Voices of Homelessness and have a wonderful day.